Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show. Hey, what's up? This is Christian with the Most High Show, and today I'm sitting with Doug, and we're going to be talking about step 9 of the 12 steps, these steps that people use to get freedom over substance, over alcohol, over a lot of different things. These steps are applicable to life change and transformation, and we're today talking about step 9. And what's step 9 again?
You're making
the mic up here.
Yeah, you're making amends to made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. After the 8th step, you're basically missing a list.
Yeah.
The concept is that, you know, a big part of addictions, it's a shame-based disease, in that you almost inevitably have caused some pain or suffering or harm to other people. It's very important for you to face that in order to grow and move on, spiritually and otherwise.
So this is a part of that, cleaning up that wreckage, so that you can kind of move forward with a clear conscience as much as possible.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, the purpose of why we talk about these steps is because there's so many people who are still suffering, are still out there. And so we use social media as a platform. We use YouTube. We use the podcast as a platform to get the message out, to let people know that there are those of us who do recover, who make it through. It's not easy. It's hard. We're not trying to sugarcoat anything. And so before we get too deep, what I'd like for you to do is just tell us kind of like a overview of your story and kind of the journey that's brought you here tonight.
We'll give the Cliff Notes version. I've had battles with addiction since I was 18, and you know, had various periods of sobriety. Previous to my current time sober, I'm coming up on 14 years.
Okay.
I had just shy of 5 years.
Make sure you pull the mic up. I'm gonna talk.
All right. Yeah. I had just short of 5 years. Leading up to that, I had gotten sober, but I wasn't really 100% committed to, you know, the program and to working the steps. Okay. Working a spiritual program. I was kind of just going through the motions and going to meetings, and ultimately, that caught up with me. And I relapsed. When I relapsed, I was probably 25, 26, 25.
Mm-hmm. And how many years sober were you at that point?
At that point, I was just shy of 5 years. So it was like 4 years and 9 months.
Okay. All right.
I relapsed. All the things that they say are going to happen. It was very quick. It got a hold of me, despite the years sober. Drugs and alcohol had a grip on me very quickly. I'll fast forward through what the relapse was. I mean, it was, where previously I was more involved with drugs, it was mostly alcohol, but I was blacking out a lot.
Okay.
Getting into fights, doing stuff, it's not something that I do,
Right.
Just total departure from my normal self, sober self. Ultimately it culminated in me getting into a car accident. I'd been out with my girlfriend at a party, drinking, and, I was blacked out. I was completely inebriated. Most of what I know about that night comes from police reports and from, people that were around me that night, what they remember about it. The gist of it is I left this party and I had been drinking. I got into a fight with my girlfriend and I got into a car accident. I don't remember anything about it. I was on the highway. I guess I was headed home, but someone was killed. I was you know, rubbed up against this car. I don't really know exactly, you know, the details of it, but it resulted in, you know, I can tell you what the police report says, but it ultimately, tragically, a young woman was killed. That resulted in me obviously getting arrested. Mm-hmm. A journey through the Arizona criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So obviously after, you know, approximately 2 years of relapsing, I got sober in jail and then in prison. Yeah. You know, I had tremendous shame and self-loathing, disgust with myself. It was very difficult, you know, getting through the adjudication process.
Yeah.
And getting ultimately sentenced.
How long did you
get so ultimately I got sentenced to 13 years. Mm-hmm. Of that, I ended up doing 11 and a half years, or 11 years and actually 11 years and 3 months to be exact. Mm. But I had to find peace. We're talking about the ninth step. I had to find peace with what I had done. Otherwise, there was just no way that I was going to be able to live in my own skin. And yeah. I would describe, you know, the normal path of sobriety, you know, through the various 12-step programs, wasn't really available where I ended up in prison.
Okay.
So I had to, you know, I had experience working the steps, which is essentially just a path to spiritual living. It's just a step-by-step yeah. guide to finding spirituality and a connection with your whatever your higher power is, whatever yeah. your concept of that is. The normal path of that wasn't, like, I didn't have support groups. They had meetings there, but they were, like we were talking about, they were kind of set up within the institution as like a punishment, and not, you know, nobody there was really trying to stay sober.
Right, right.
So
you're in these meetings with a bunch of prisoners who are kind of forced to be there so they can get their commissary back or their visitations visits, back.
Telephone
so
calls, exactly.
They're just perpetrating. They're just sitting in there fronting, but there really is no... Most people weren't desiring to gain lasting.
Not at recovery. All. No, in fact, they were.
But actually, what about you? Were you in there feeling like I need to get this work?
No, out? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was very committed to staying sober. I mean, I had like a kind of an awakening that it was like I was either going to die in this place or I was going to find a way to live. Mm. And for a lot of reasons, partly because my family, I was committed to doing whatever it took to stay sober. And you know, for those of you that don't, you know, aren't familiar with the criminal justice system, especially the prisons, I mean, they're absolutely flooded with drugs. I mean, it's just, yeah. you know, a lot of people are in there for, that's what they get arrested for, they're smuggling drugs, so it doesn't stop. You know,
right.
The profit margins just increase.
Right.
People are dropping dead from overdoses left and right.
Yeah.
All the movies you see and all the, you know, prison scenes, I mean, most of the people that die that were coming out of the places I were dying from overdoses or suicides.
Wow.
So, you know, In a nutshell, I had to find a way to do service. You know, what I know of the program is, you know, the essence of it is addiction is the epitome of selfishness and self-absorbed, self-seeking.
Yeah.
And the solution is selflessness, and that's service yeah. with other people.
Yeah.
So, you know, in my situation, you know, the ninth step, making direct amends to people that you've harmed. You know, there was obviously other people that had harmed, you know, had to make amends to family members, you know, on, you know, a number of different things. I mean, primarily my relapse, you know, because I've been sober and I took them on this roller coaster again.
Right, right. So family, loved ones had kind of experienced this, you know, addicted you. And then here's 5 years of this sober you, this you, the actual you.
Right.
And then they have to experience it kind of all again.
All over again. Not to mention that addiction had killed my brother probably about 10 years previous to that. So, I mean,
right.
it was, you yeah. know, very consequential
yeah.
to my family. And I was not all right with that. So, you know, I was going to do this thing one way or the other. I was completely determined. I didn't know how to do it. I was in a very ugly, hostile environment.
Yeah.
People were not very receptive to anything that looked like,
vulnerability.
Vulnerability or spirituality. Talking about your feelings. Any of those things. You know, you just don't do those things in that environment.
Spiders over there with a tattoo on his forehead.
Right, so it can be a dangerous place. I mean, you've got to kind of project this. You do not want to look, soft or whatever. Because, people get victim. I mean, that does happen. I mean, it's maybe kind of skewed and, Hollywood, but it is, it can be a dangerous place. So, I was blessed in that I got an opportunity to work in the GED school, tutoring other people, help them get their GEDs.
Okay.
And so this was like kind of my salvation in there, because there's just a lot of hopelessness and despair. But in doing that, so I wasn't able to carry the message of, any particular program in terms of, sharing the message of, the 12 steps and staying sober and how to do that.
Right.
Not directly. That wasn't really an option. You would probably get hurt if you approach somebody.
in that way.
So, I started helping people, in a GED school, and it was like, it like clicked. It was like a moment of clarity. It was like, it was like the burning bush for me. It was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I had a sense of peace. It was pretty profound when it happened. It was like, I was all of a sudden okay in my own skin. And it was just a taste of it. Obviously I would, I go back and struggle with different, it's very easy to get depressed. It would almost be abnormal for you to not suffer with depression, regardless of what the circumstances were that got you in that. Because there's just a lot of heavy, hard stuff.
Yeah.
Not to mention the lack of creature comforts and all the normal things, women, normal food, intelligent conversation. I mean, it can be a...
You didn't have any of that.
No. So it can be an uncomfortable place. But in that, I looked at it as an opportunity, because it kind of forced me to dig in and to tackle some of the things that were going on with me, into, my own spiritual journey, into, get into a lot of introspect. I got heavy into education. I started studying psychology and started working on.
But you're doing most of this is like... on your own, like isolated, right?
I mean,
it's not like you had like a therapist walking you through this.
I was corresponding. I have some awesome family. I have some family members that are decade sober, and
So you're writing letters to them, or they're
right. So I'm corresponding with them. So I had an awesome support group from afar. Yeah. Granted, they don't live in Arizona. They're here.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing that stuff. So I got some really, incredible advice from people. But, I was pretty much on my own in terms of doing it. I mean, and God, I hit my knees probably 6 times a day, because there was just times that, there's just no way you're going to do this on your own. I mean, it's just, you start the enormity of it that you're facing. It can be overwhelming. But to stay the course, I did. I just stuck with it. I knew as long as I continued to do that. I mean, also I had this tremendous shame in having taken someone's life. The way that I came to terms with that is that I had to hold myself to a higher standard. And this goes directly to the 9th step, into making, this is what we call living amends. I couldn't make amends to the life that I took directly.
Yeah. Right.
But I would pay it indirectly by holding myself to a higher standard and living my life and holding myself to the highest, level. I was hard on myself to go above and beyond, to be of service to other people, to be honest, to try and be selfless, to try and be generous, to try and be, gracious and keep an attitude of gratitude.
Yeah.
And the truth was, and it wasn't that difficult to maintain gratitude, and everything else froze from that. Because I knew that there'd been so many, incidents that I cheated death.
Right.
So, truly prison was a gift.
Well,
I had my 9 lives plus another 10, overdoses, car accidents, I had to say, why am I, to some extent there was survival guilt, and I had to work through that. And it was like, well, it's gotta be for a reason.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was quite clear what I was supposed to be doing, and that was like, you know, carrying the message. And so the experience, and you know, to me, my entire program and staying sober is carrying the message. And my experience with that, you know, I'm never going to be the best public speaker, but I can reach a certain individual that a lot of other people are going to have a hard time doing.
Yeah,
because I've been there. Yeah. I've crawled through it.
Yeah. So do you? Okay. So you go through this. You do your time. And then you get your release day. So are there family members now that once you get out that you can now make an amends to? And what were you can share? What was that like?
You know,
or do you feel like once you got out, kind of worked that out?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the pay, right? I've already kind of covered all of that because, you know, I was getting visits and I was, corresponding. I wrote a lot of letters.
Yeah.
Wrote a lot of letters because, you know, honestly, that was my therapist. Very cathartic, you know, just putting stuff down on paper, like getting out of yourself because, like you said, especially the first 4 years, you're essentially locked in a cell all day.
Yeah.
I would get out to go to work to do the school thing for a couple hours. But, I mean, you spend a lot of time locked in a 6x9 with another guy and you're not necessarily – you know, feeling the love. You're not necessarily liking each other, talking to each other. You're cellies, you know?
Yeah.
It is what it is. But so I had done a lot of that through the mail, you know, and you know, they would come out. I mean, I'm blessed. They would come out at least twice a year, you know.
Wow.
To Arizona to visit me, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least Arizona's a scenic place. You know, there was other stuff. You know, they could hit some tourist sites. Yeah, yeah. You know, the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, we're gonna go
different
see
monuments,
Grand Canyon while we're out there. We're gonna go see your cousin Doug. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, I was able to do a lot of that, but again, you know, to me, the amends that I paid to my parents and the people that were so let down and disappointed was a living amends. You know, there was nothing that I could say. It was the behavior that I was demonstrating. They could see it in my actions. They could see how I had changed and how I was committed to helping other people.
Yeah.
You know, my parents are very strong faith, are very involved with church. And that in itself, seeing me do that and, like, you know, just knowing it is true, you know? And so, you know, so the ninth step going forward, when I got released, we started a nonprofit. We actually have a halfway house. It's like a sober living facility for people coming out of jails and prisons.
Nice.
You know, I mean, this is me paying for continuing to, you know, living amends.
That really resonates with me, the living amends, because when I went to rehab, you know, I have a wife and three kids. And so I was freaking out in rehab. I wanted to just leave, you know, because I wanted to hurry up and go fix this.
Right.
It was like all that guilt and shame was sitting on me, and I wanted to go fix it, but it wasn't going to work like that.
Right.
And so the only way I could really make an amends, you know, especially like when I look at my kids, is like, you know, it was like through their developmental years, I was there, but I was very not there. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, how do you come back at that and go, okay, here, let me unscrew up your life now. I'm going to reverse time. I can't do that.
No,
so
right.
All I can start to do is be a better dad, be a better husband, be of service in the community, and live those amends. I think that was a lot of my amends were living amends. There were a few people that I had to... And they would come up like a year later, 2 years into it. I would go, oh, I should probably call that person.
Right.
And so I would call, hey, I realized I was a dick. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing. And what can I do to make that better?
Right.
And most people would say, you know, it's all good. It's all good. Don't worry about it. Thank you for calling. How you doing? Right. We would just catch up. But there were a couple people that actually did give me the information.
So that's exactly right. So, you know, to me, and this is just me. I'm not a representative of any particular program or organization. To me, you know, the ninth step, as it's phrased within various programs, you know, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them others. Is it's just opening the door. to right. taking responsibility for your actions. Because the truth is, most of us in our addictions, whether it's, you know, drug or alcohol or whatever, or sex or gambling or any of those things, that's part of the damage done. It's all the lies and the deception and the manipulation yeah. and all of that stuff. So yeah. your words are kind of hollow. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
you know, so some people are kind of like, you know, some people are insulted depending on what it is. Yeah. Oh, you're not going to get warm embraces and let's, you know, sit down and sing Kumbaya. I mean, that's not how it goes. The point is that you're facing your fears. You know, for me, that's what the ninth step is. The real stuff comes, real recovery is when you're living it and then they see it. And then there may actually be some reconciliation yeah. and some forgiveness. Yeah. And there may not. You may have burned some bridges, but that whole process is becoming a true man or woman yeah. And, you know, learning how to live peacefully in your own skin.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kind of the thing that we all live with, I think, you know, most addicts or alcoholics is your mind and your heart are kind of in conflict.
Yeah.
You know, and bringing those things into alignment, this, you have to face your past. You know, yeah. the idea is that you face it down, and then once you've addressed all of these things, you can move forward.
Yeah.
You can start to grow and go into a new direction. So,
and it's interesting that it's at 9, right? There's some steps that gets you to that point, because this is not easy.
No, it's very difficult, and you've already you know, having, you know, obviously the first step and the third step are huge, you know. And then you're, you know, doing a four step, you're taking inventory.
Yeah.
And then you're getting right, you know, you're sharing that with someone and to God, and then you're, you know, the process of, you know, and then asking God or your higher power to you know, relieve you of this and to move yeah. forward. But it's a, you know, it's also, if you look at the wording, it's not saying that it's just gonna poof and be gone. It's like it's a process, yeah. you know, that yeah. that you're ready to do it. And then then the ninth step comes, and I mean, you know, different people, different steps will be more yeah. difficult. I would say, you know, to me, all of the steps truly were to get to the 12th step, mm-hmm. which is helping people.
Yeah.
Because you can't give something away that you don't have. So you've right. got to work through that stuff. You yeah. have to have, you know, started making some huge, you know, personal growth before you can have anything to say to anybody else, you know, right. that's kind of embarking on the same journey. But that's what it's at for me, because for me, like, the first step was, I mean, it was a given. I'm laying in a prison cell, I mean, I'd killed someone, I'm, you know, physically addicted. I mean, you know, my life was in shambles. There's no denying that I'm completely yeah. powerless over right. drugs and alcohol. And yeah. you know, the third step, turning your life over to, you know, the care of God, has been understood. I mean, that's a huge thing. That's an ongoing thing that, I mean, all humans, regardless of your faith, are going to struggle with that at times to right. some extent.
Yeah.
You know, because you're getting into my will or God's will. Is this my will? That's part of the program, is teaching you to constantly evaluate your motives and given, you know, different situations to make sure that you're, you know, to always be trying to be in God's will and not your will.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the human, you know.
Yeah. And I think like facing your past in whatever way that ends up working out, you know, is so key to, you know, growing in spiritually. You know, I think for me personally, like when I first, so I was addicted growing up as a kid. I got into drugs and alcohol really early on. And then I had a spiritual experience when I met Jesus at this big event, and I just stopped using. I mean, it was a big, huge spiritual experience. But what I didn't do is I didn't kind of do these. I didn't go through the steps. I didn't kind of evaluate my thoughts, my behavior. I didn't clean up any wreckage from my past.
Right.
And I just kind of was like, all right, let's do this. And, you know, it was about 3-4 years almost that I started saying, oh, I can drink. There's right, nothing wrong yeah. with drinking. It's legal. I'm fine.
Well, and you're around other people that are living spiritual lives, and they can do that.
And they can drink.
So that's the trap.
Yeah. And so I start drinking, and it's not even a year later, I'm doing dope again. And then that's 10 years that takes me yeah. off, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think like, there are those people who do kind of have a spiritual experience and they ride off into the sunset, and God bless them. But for most of us, You know, you can't solve a problem or address a problem by continuing to not deny it. You have to acknowledge it. And then this ninth step is so important because you it's kind of like the seal on it, right? Like all right, you've acknowledged you've done these things. You've acknowledged you have these character defects. Now you're going to face the wreckage that you've done.
Right.
And that's like through that valley you can get
right in a multiple levels, because for one thing, I mean, forget, you know, resentments and, you know, shame about doing something specific. In a more general sense, you were facing your fears. And at its core, you know, alcoholism, addiction, there is a huge fear component. You can call it anxiety, you can call it this, you can call it that. Yeah. You're scared of all these things, and this is putting you right there where you got to face it. First, you got to put it on paper in a four step. That's like, oh my God, I got to put all this stuff that I did, all my dirt right here. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I got to give it to God. I got to talk to somebody else about it. Are you kidding me? You know, that's a huge, huge, huge step, but almost without experience, it's not necessarily overnight, but you know, you learn that the fears that are worked up in your head, once you face them, they're not nearly as insurmountable as you thought they were.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they just go away with one, you know, with going through a step, but that's a very important thing. And the same thing with the ninth step, you're facing your fears, you know, and then you come to realize that a lot of them are like, you start to see the sickness, that the disease has to do with like, it's a way you think. It's not just, you know, it's a spiritual thing, it's a mental thing. It doesn't have anything to do really with the drug or the alcohol. That's not the problem. It's your thinking and your, you know, that's getting you in trouble. Cause you know, you get sober and you remove the drug and that just gets you to the, to the starting, you know, to starting line.
So talk to me about, because you seem very much like somebody who has worked through a lot of that shame and that's a heavy burden to bear. And shame, you know, is a obstacle for a lot of us. So like, what, how can, talk to me about like you working through, you know, it's one thing you forgive someone else, but it's like to forgive yourself, to kind of allow yourself to move forward from that, and the shame that you feel, you know, that it's like you can, there was a guy talking at a Bible study, and he was just, you know, I'm a piece of shit, I'm this, I'm so, and it's like, okay, we got to get through that, because if you keep telling yourself you're a piece of shit, well then you're going to probably treat yourself that way.
Right.
You know, so this idea of shame, like, just tell me, like, how did that process in dealing with shame and getting to a point where you know,
it's you know, I had the benefit of, you know, having been sober before and having working in the program, and I kind of understood the mechanics of it. And I was also started studying psychology, and I ended up getting a, you know, bachelor's degree in psychology and also business. I had a lot of time, so I kept my mind occupied, because you know, but you know, like you hear in the rooms of pretty much all the programs that I've been to, you know, it's an action program. It's not a thinking program, it's a doing program.
Yeah.
So the way through all of this stuff is getting busy doing service, is getting busy working. You can't, there's no way you're gonna, you know, intellectualize or philosophize. You're not gonna get through it just by or just talking to somebody and therapy. Yeah. All those things are helpful. I'm not but
at some point, some action has to happen.
The action has to happen. And where I was and the place that I was, it was very clear what I had to do. I had to get busy trying to help people wherever I could get in there and help people. Yeah. And just my nature, it just kind of worked out. I you know, I look back at it, the politics of, you know, the prisons and stuff, like, you know, going through the high custody, the 4 yard, and when I got to lower custody yard, I had enough of a, you know, establish yourself enough in the higher yards that I was able to do things and reach out to people. And then I was actually approaching people. And I started working with, like, you know, kind of the inmate hierarchy and helping people that were in trouble, because people get in debt. If you get in debt in prison, it's all bad, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have different races, and it's very racial, at least out there it is. And so, you know, you have a white guy who owes a Mexican guy or a black guy money. You know, it becomes an issue that, you know, that other race, they're gonna want to put hands, or they're gonna either want to smash him or stab him or whatever. So I would get involved and try to take these guys on. So I kind of force myself on them, like in a sponsorship. So this is not something you would be doing out here in the free world.
But you were in an extreme situation.
Yeah, I was doing what I had to do, and I can tell you I probably sponsored 15 guys, and there's one that stayed sober, but he's got 10 years, and he got out, and he grew up on the streets, and now he's running a major treatment center in Arizona. You know? Like, he got out 5 years before me, and he just moved to Wisconsin, actually, in the last week to open up a detox unit for them. So he's, like, the face of this, like, company. He had, like, 50 employees. I mean, this guy, I helped him get his GED. And then, then I find out, after we got out, he's like, well, I didn't really pass it. I kind of paid somebody to take the test. I spent years. I mean, but he was able to transfer his street smarts and his drive and his hustle into, you know, Three Wheel and helping people. And his background... You know, similar to mine, except that his you know, his background, you know, like, I come from a good family. I mean, you know, he grew up rough, you know. He grew up on the streets, literally.
And so you never, I mean, in that action of service to others, you know, you never know how impactful that is.
No, you don't. And that's the thing, is you got to get out of your head and stop thinking about it, because the thing is it seems hopeless. I mean, especially in that environment, it seems hopeless. But I can tell you what I did. What I did, like, I didn't even know what my spiritual beliefs are. I didn't know what I believed in.
Yeah.
You know, this day, I don't know. There's something that I can tap into. I'll hit my knees. A lot of that is the humility of just hitting my knees. But I didn't know what else to do. You know, I needed to tap into something, because it was bigger than me. I couldn't do it on my own. So I hit my knees, and I would continue to, you know, and ask for... You know, you don't pray for things to get better. You don't pray for life to be easy. You pray for the strength to endure the things that you're gonna inevitably encounter. So I prayed for the strength to continue to stay at this, regardless of what I thought about it. And this is pointless. This is hopeless. I would keep, you know, just every day. And so I'm just, you know, how that hit my, you know, affected me working through shame is just I was just chiseling away at it. You know, there was no, like, all of a sudden I was. You know, like I said, when I started helping people, I would get peace from that, you know. But in terms of, you know, there would still be nights where I would wake up and be like, I can't, you know, I wake up, you know, you fall asleep and you wake up in the middle of the night and you're looking up at a cell and you're looking through your little thing, and you're looking at razor wire and hearing the squawks of radios. And I mean, you're just like, how, even years into it, you're like, how did I end up here? You know what I mean? And then it just all comes back and you're like,
wow.
Oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you stay at it, you know, and stuff gets better. And, I guess that's the answer. There is no, you know, magic formula. It's just, you know, perseverance, you know, and the strength or the tenacity to stay with that came from, you know, prayer and a stubborn belief that I would prevail eventually.
Right.
And I had nothing but time. I had nothing but time. And that the alternative was very grim.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're looking at these guys who don't care. They've accepted, they've embraced that life. And I was never going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, people in the meeting, you know, I mean, if I'm being honest, I got to a maximum security yard and I saw some of these dudes, and people go to meetings and they're like, you know, I just worked through, came to a meeting and I felt like I was home. I still don't feel like I'm home. I come here because this is where, you know what I mean, I can be of service. When I hit a maximum security yard, I honestly felt more in common with some of the guys in there, and that scared the shit out of me.
Right.
It scared the shit out of me. Because they were all that guy in the back of the room that was cutting up in school when we were kids and making fun of the smart kids and, like, picking on people and just being a asshole, you know. I was, you know, a little bit that way, and then but I wasn't to that extreme. I wasn't okay with some of the stuff they were up to, you know.
Right.
You know, but their sense of humor, their basic demeanor, like, you know, and I was like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this for life, you know. This is not what I'm about. So, I mean, I got busy. I was like, looking at those guys, it was a constant reminder that I had to work. And like I said, that shame was a powerful motivator for me to continue to work at trying to be a better person, because I knew the only way I was going to get out of that shame is I was, you know, if I left somebody dead on the side of the highway and I didn't do anything about it, well, then I am a piece of shit. You know what I mean? But if I'm doing everything I can to be a better person, a productive person, and to help my fellow man, then you know, I feel like I'm you know, at least I think service is our rent for our time here on earth.
No.
And if there's a secret to life in general, that's what it is, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean I've worked with some people who they've gotten out of some programs, and the programs don't instill that idea of service. And they sit with me, and they're like, you can just tell they're floating. And it's like, yeah, they're sober, right. They're clean, but the concept of service.
Right, that's what fills that hole that you've been trying to fill with drugs.
I mean, even if you're not even an addict, and someone's like dealing with depression, I'll tell them, go to the mission. You can show up at the Atlanta Mission or any homeless shelter and serve them food and get out of your, like you said, get out of your head, break the pattern that you're in, and go serve in that situation. And, you know, you're going to walk out of there with some gratitude.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, but the key thing to know is that when you first start doing that and somebody tells you to do that, it's not going to give you instant relief. It's going to feel like a chore.
Right.
But at some point, if you stay at it, it will click and you will have a moment. You'll be like, holy shit, you know, this is good stuff. You know what I mean? And you don't have to be a, you know, a choir boy, a church or whatever. You're just doing this stuff, you know? Yeah. You know, I used to laugh at like those stickers, you know, perform random acts of senseless kindness and stuff. You know, when I was a kid, we used to be like, bah.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly what it is. You know, just doing little stuff like that. You know, in my daily life, you know, when I was still incarcerated, it was like something I was doing. It was on my program. And then you get out, you know, I got out, I'm trying to make up for 11 years of lost time. I'm trying to build a career. I'm going to grad school. I'm running a nonprofit. You know, I'm trying to do all these things. And it's like, you know, you it's easy to get caught in the rat race and forget these things. So it is kind of like impromptu. Like this morning I get a phone call from somebody and I'm doing this stuff. This is service.
This is service.
This is not what I wanted to be doing right now. I'm exhausted. I just went through finals at Georgia Tech. I'm totally spent. But this is what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you sharing. I appreciate you taking the time to share.
Absolutely.
And I think like it's a for those people who think, okay, I can do this on my own, or I'll just another drink, or I'm gonna go back. That, you know, that saying you hear, you know, I hate the cliches, but that jails, institutions, and death.
Yeah.
I mean it's really real. And when you tell somebody in their face, look, you keep doing this, you're gonna get killed, you're gonna kill somebody, or you're gonna lose your family, or these are the consequences.
It's inevitable. I mean, that's just what happens. I've had all of them, you know. So
So thank you for sharing it. And if you're listening to this podcast, you can check out more episodes at themosthighshow.com. And if you need help, there's contact information there. Hit us up. We can connect you to places that can help you and in your journey to getting sober and living life free. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.